read another question this morning that I received. Should Christians, armed or unarmed, defend themselves, or should they become martyrs? People went to battle, and in the New Testament, it appears people were martyred. In high school,
there were two guys.
Because I
was listed as the defender of
someone else who was a year younger
and smaller than I was. That person turned out to be a better not trust me. Because if you do, Jim was a better. So they immediately left him and apparently decided that if several of them always decided they were going to take me in. And I had no idea.
So I'm trying to figure out what are these guys do?
Based on the similar. Now I'm not supposed to bump that. That doesn't mean I have to just stand there and hit my face repeatedly. I thought it was legitimate for me to leave. But I did turn and run the opposite. I actually appealed to authority,
which is a big thing to do. A boy named Eddie had ambushed me in the hall following driver's ed. I stopped by the principal's office
because he just attacked me in the hall for no reason. So, I don't know if Eddie ever got his counseling or not, but I do know that he was one of several guys who used a knife and other means to try and threaten me. They stood outside the school one afternoon, about a day later or 2 days later, and tried to get me on the way to the bus. I was walking to get the bus, very undignified means of getting to and from school, I realize. But I was taking driver's ed, so there was hope for the future. As I walked to the bus, these guys were standing there, and there was a little crowd standing to watch because everybody knew what was coming. And I just sent up a quick prayer to the Lord silently and walked right through the little ring of guys who were standing there to fight me. And they turned. I wish I could have gotten a video of this because I know it was good. They turned and followed me to the bus. Now, they didn't run and grab me. They didn't touch me. That's the kindness of the Lord. I know that they wondered afterwards, why did we do that? But they followed me to the bus. I got on, took my seat, and they're standing down on the sidewalk saying, "Get off the bus! Get off the bus!" And, of course, I'm looking ahead and thinking, this is really crazy. I have been hit and not hit back. And I believe that that is biblical based on what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5. You've heard that it was said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if someone wants to sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. If someone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Give to the one who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. I do not believe that I'm supposed to defend myself if somebody's trying to steal my television or assault me physically. However, some of you probably know that I have a concealed carry permit so that my Glock 9mm can be on my person and I can use it if need be. Well, why in the world would you have a concealed carry permit and carry a gun? Because I'm not the only person I have to be responsible for. There's a difference between somebody attacking me and my turning the other cheek and someone attacking my family or my neighbor, and my saying, "Oh, gosh, I'm so sorry. I hope you get... Ooh, that looks like it... Oh, wow, that looks like it really hurts. I hope you're going to get over it, okay?" There's a difference between self-defense and the defense of others. And so if we look at what God tells us in Romans 13, there is a role for the government to actually engage in violence in order to punish evildoers and in order to protect its citizens. If you look in Romans chapter 13, everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. Now, this was during the reign of Nero. This was when the Roman government was not at all godly, but they were still the government. The authorities that exist have been established by God. Consequently, he who rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and those who do so will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers hold no terror for those who do right, but for those who do wrong. Do you want to be free from the fear of the one in authority? Then do what is right, and he will commend you, for he is God's servant to do you good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword for nothing. He is God's servant, an agent of wrath to bring punishment on the wrongdoer. Therefore, it is necessary to submit to the authorities, not only because of possible punishment, but because of conscience. This is also why you pay taxes. For the authorities are God's servants who give their full time to governing. Give everyone what you owe him. If you owe taxes, pay taxes. If revenue, then revenue. If respect, then respect. If honor, then honor. Okay, so the government can use force, even violence, even lethal force, in order to protect its citizens, according to Romans 13. But I'm not the government. So how do I get the authority to have a gun and to protect my family? Great question. I am blessed to live in a country where God has sovereignly seen fit to entrust the citizens of that country with something called self-governance. And one of the responsibilities given to us by our government is the responsibility to be an armed citizenry. Now, there are a lot of people today who say, no, 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 that's a complete misunderstanding of the Bill of Rights. And I would submit to you that I also read English, study history, and I think you're out to lunch, because the Bill of Rights specifically provided for the citizens of this country to be able to be armed. We not only needed guns in order to harvest food. I have never known any reason why someone should have to shoot a vegetable. Okay. Well, not everybody in the history of this country is a vegetarian. And if you want to bring down larger animals, or for that matter, even something like a rabbit, unless you're an incredible runner, then guns are very handy. And guns are not only useful for harvesting food, but guns are also useful for protecting the homestead. And at the homestead, I'm not just trying to keep people from running off with my stored up wheat and corn and so forth. I'm trying to protect my family, because there are bad people out there. Now, I've had my concealed carry permit for a number of years, and so far I've never had to pull a gun on anybody. And I hope that I will die at a ripe old age never having had to pull my gun on anybody. But as I was saying earlier, if someone attacks me, I'm not going to pull a gun. As a matter of fact, I hope they don't find the gun. Okay? But if somebody attacked my family or attacked one of you, then I have a responsibility as the head of my home and as the head of this ministry to seek to protect you. And there have been times when there were threats against people here, and our security team, because I'm not the only person with a gun, our security team was on alert and prepared in case we had a violent encounter, with the full blessing and authority of the government. Talking just about the Bill of Rights? No. I'm talking about our local governing authorities, with whom we have an excellent relationship, and we have folks who are empowered literally, specifically, by the local government to provide protection here at the ranch. Isn't that nice to know? Who are they? We're not telling. Okay? But I want you to understand something. There is a responsibility that we have to protect others that does not mean, boy, nobody better mess with me because if anybody does, I'm going to give as good as I got. That's not it. It's not about self-defense. It's about defending others, protecting them. Now, the way the question was asked, there were two alternatives. One was self-defense and the other was martyrdom. Jesus actually offers another alternative. And that is, he says, if you're persecuted in this city, flee to the next. You don't have to stay around and just take beating after beating. If you're in a situation where violence is being used against you, Jesus says, get out of town. It is legitimate to flee. It is totally legitimate to say, this is not a hospitable environment. Okay? They can have my TV. I'm moving to, trying to think of a nonviolent place in the United States, East Tennessee. I'm moving to Ware's Valley. I understand there's a low crime rate in Ware's Valley. It's true. Let me tell you some places you don't want to move. You don't want to move any place that has really tight gun laws. Places like Chicago, Washington, D.C., they have extremely high rates of gun violence because the only people allowed to have guns in those municipalities are the criminals. Well, no, the criminals are told not to have guns. Oh. Well, that solves that, doesn't it? If you tell a bad guy, don't do that, it's against the law. They say, darn, I was hoping to kill someone. I wanted to rob a bank and they've made it illegal. That doesn't work, does it? So if you live in a place where only the criminals are allowed to have guns, you're going to have an escalation of gun violence. And you do. You do. One of the least safe cities in America is Chicago, Illinois, where I was born. Actually, you were born in the suburbs. Yes, that's true. Elmhurst, Illinois is where I was born, right outside the city. And the fact of the matter is, I visit Chicago several times a year, and it is a violent, violent, violent place. You don't want to live in a place where the government tries to take away the rights of its citizens to do what our forefathers said we needed to be prepared to do, and that is defend ourselves. The city of Kennesaw, Georgia, has a very low crime rate and a very low rate of gun violence. And if you want to look at a statistical study of crime in the Atlanta area, you will see Kennesaw as being remarkably lower than the other areas around Atlanta. Is there any explanation for this? Is it that the churches in Kennesaw are better? Well, some people think it has something to do with the fact that a number of years ago, the city of Kennesaw made a controversial move. They passed a law that all residents of Kennesaw had to have a gun in the household. Everybody in Kennesaw must have a gun. We think it's important for the families in Kennesaw to be able to defend themselves. That was a law. It's still on the books. Do you know what happened to the crime rate in Kennesaw? People decided, I don't want to break into that house. They've got a gun. And so does that house. And so does, I'm going to go over to Marietta and commit my crime. Because I don't want to do it in Kennesaw. I'm liable to get my head shot off. You understand? This is true. I'm not making this up. This has been the subject of all kinds of study and analysis. And the fact of the matter is, the crime rate in Kennesaw went down when they passed that law as the crime rate in Atlanta continued to go up, 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 up. Now, can I prove cause and effect? No, I don't have to. But Kennesaw is a place that has low crime and lots of guns. So many guns that it's a bad place to pull a gun. I mean, that's like going in trying to rob a gun shop, isn't it? There have been people who've done that, and it has not ended well for them. Okay? That's like going to the police station and trying to rob the police. You know, just not a smart idea. For that matter, I wouldn't recommend going to a karate studio and trying to rob them. My son has a wonderful video of some folks who do ministry, and they have a little story about somebody getting in the elevator with them and thinking that he's going to rob them. And the guy and his wife are both experts and teachers in self-defense. And they just laughed at the guy who was trying to rob them. Let me just tell you something. The purpose of knowing how to defend yourself is not to make it so that you can go around and intimidate other people. The purpose is so that you can defend others. And I think it's an excellent thing for all you young ladies to know how to take out an attacker, even without being armed. Remember, the question was, armed or unarmed? You do not have to have a gun in order to be able to resist somebody who's trying to harm you. I'm just going to go ahead and give some self-defense lessons real quickly for our ladies. You guys don't need to know this stuff. Yeah, you do. Okay? If you're ever in a situation where there's a dangerous person who, having harmed you, might go on to harm other people, there are things you can do, like removing an eyeball, for instance. Not your own, but the other person's. Most people find that very disconcerting when they're trying to hurt you if you pull their eyeball out. Okay? Now, you say, well, I've never pulled an eyeball out in my life. How would I even do that? Well, you don't want to stick your whole hand in there. Just a thumb or a forefinger is very good. And you say, well, I'm not sure I can get it out. Well, if you try, that will probably accomplish the same thing as far as making that person very sorry that they messed with you. You understand? Say, well, I don't know that I could do that. Well, there's another wonderful trick, and that is to collapse the person's trachea so that they're not able to get their next breath. Okay? If you collapse their trachea, I didn't say stab it, I'm talking about collapse it. You can do that not with a fist, well, possibly with a fist, but better with the side of the hand. Okay? And if you collapse the person's trachea and they can't breathe, all of a sudden they lose interest in you. Okay? The only thing that matters to them is trying to get their next breath. Okay? I'm sure you're also aware that gentlemen have an area between their two legs that is very sensitive. And if a man is struck with a forceful kick to that area, it usually distracts him from what he had on his mind. Okay? So I'm just telling you these things not because I want you to go out and say, I'm going to attack some man. You do that, and I'll try and make sure you go to prison. But if somebody is attacking you and you have to try and protect yourself or protect somebody else, I thought you said we're supposed to turn the other cheek. I would submit to you that ladies being attacked by men get a pass. You can go ahead and protect yourselves. Not that it's your responsibility and you should never have to ask for help, but I believe any man who would attack a woman not only needs to be injured badly, but other women need to be protected from that fellow, because he probably won't stop with just that person. Years ago, my dad had a couple of women in his church who were being bullied by their husbands, and it made my dad furious, because it ought not to be. Women ought not to be ill-treated by men. men should be protectors, not predators. And my dad said something from the pulpit just spontaneously. He said, I wish the next time one of these men does something like that, that the woman would just pick up a table and break it over his head. That week we got a telephone call from a fellow. Our family was going out for something very rare. We didn't usually get to do this, but we were going out that evening to have a nice time as a family. And the phone rang, and this man said, Pastor Wood, please come to my house. I need to see you right away. Dad said, I'm sorry, but I've already committed to take my family out. And he said, please, Pastor Wood, it's an emergency. So my dad said, are you all okay if we stop by so-and-so's house on our way to do what we were going to do? And we said, sure, do what you need to do. So we got in the car. We went to the man's house. As I often did, I got out of the car and accompanied my dad to the house. I often went places with, I was a little boy. Often went places with my dad, watched what he was doing, listened to him as he was ministering to people, praying with people, counseling people, reading the Bible with people. So I got out of the car, went to the door. This man came to the door and he had blood all over his shirt and on his head. Dad turned to me and said, son, go get in the car. So I turned around, went back to the car, and I said, he's got blood all over him. After a little while, my dad, having gone inside the house, came back to the car, got inside, put it in gear, and pulled away. And he said, well, I didn't intend for someone to literally follow through with what I said on Sunday, but apparently she did. This man had had a few drinks, and as he often did, began to get violent, grabbing his wife and hitting her. And she picked up an end table that was next to the sofa. That's one of those little wooden tables next to the sofa. And holding it by the legs, went boom over the top of his head. Smashed it to bits, okay? And her husband, in that moment, had an epiphany. He decided he didn't ever want to hit a woman again. And that he needed to call Pastor Wood and get help and give his life to Christ. And turn away from his violent behaviors and from his drinking. I think that was an efficient use of force. She didn't go on to beat him with it. She hit him one time, and that was enough. It was a wake-up call, you might say. So, I would submit that there's a different standard for ladies than there is for men. Men, please understand this. There is no excuse ever for you to be violent toward a woman. None. No matter what you've seen, no matter what you've heard, and no matter what an unpleasant person she may be, there's no excuse. There's no excuse for you to be violent. Now, ladies, the goal is not to try and just protect yourself. As with men, if you're having to fight against a man who's behaving that way, you're sticking up for others too. Because men who behave that way don't just do it toward one person. Is that clear? I hope it is. Gentlemen, you need to understand that if someone attacks you, you don't have to be a martyr in order to get out of that situation. But if you are in a situation where, because of your faith, someone is wanting to kill you, Jesus offers you the opportunity to flee to the next city, to get out, to go away. And if, in fact, you end up dying because of your faith, that is a glorious way to go. I can't think of anything else. I mean, how much better to die for your faith than for bacon? You understand? I mean, you're going to die for something, you know. Well, I died for my remote control. It was just too much sedentary lifestyle. That's a lousy reason to die. You don't want to die because you were driving and texting, right? How much better to be martyred than just stupid? Okay? So, your choices aren't exclusively self-defense or martyrdom. You can leave. But please understand that you need to know, I think I told the story not all that long ago about having been taught self-defense when I was a child, because my parents didn't feel I had to turn the other cheek. I had a couple of opportunities, three that I can recall, to use what I learned. One was a boy who used to beat me up all the time. He lived next door to us in Villa Park, Illinois. He was literally our next door neighbor, and he used to come over and for no reason at all attack me. And my parents got tired of my being beaten up, and my brothers got tired of my being beaten up, and they told me the next time he does that, just punch him in the nose. Now, we were preschoolers, folks. I was a little preschool kid. This kid had broken my Christmas toys. He punched a hole in the windshield of my plastic windshield of my tricycle. He took my rifleman rifle and said, "Hey, can I see it?" And being the nice innocent that I was, I handed it to him. And he took it and smashed it. The first morning I got it, Christmas morning, he smashed it on the sidewalk. And that was the end of the rifleman rifle, which I'd wanted for so long and my parents had bought me. And I'm sorry, I'll be okay in a minute. This kid was a real royal jerk, and he used to physically attack me. And so they said, give him a warning. Don't you ever attack somebody else, but give him a warning. And if he keeps on coming, then just punch him in the nose. So a few days later, the kid's walking toward me, and my brother showed me how to throw a punch. He's coming toward me and he's saying, "I'm going to beat you up. I'm going to beat you up, Jimmy. I'm going to beat you up." And I said, "You better not come any closer or I'm going to punch you in the nose." And he kept coming saying, "I'm going to beat you up." And so when he got within reach, I decked him. Just absolutely one punch to the nose. Gave him a nosebleed and the shock of his life, and he went running home to mom. And his mom called my mom and said, "Your son just punched my son in the nose." And my mom said, "Which son of mine did that?" And the woman said, "Jimmy." I was by far the youngest. And my mother said, "Good. It's about time. Your son has been coming over here and beating up our son over and over, and I'm glad he finally stood up to your son." That was the end of that conversation. So that was one opportunity. That was self-defense, something I'm not advocating, but I did know how to do. But then there was Richard, who was being choked by Howard, and there was no one else in the room. And as Richard couldn't breathe and was going, "Save me! Help! Help!" I thought, I can't just sit here and watch him die. And Howard is probably in the penitentiary right now. Howard had him in a headlock and was choking him. It was a chokehold. It was awful. And so I told Howard to let him go. And Howard wouldn't let him go. So I put one punch into Howard's solar plexus, which is this area right here. And all of a sudden, Howard couldn't breathe. And he totally let go of Richard. And Richard was very grateful, and he and I are Facebook friends today. But I didn't attack Howard. I warned Howard, and Howard wouldn't let go of Richard. I wasn't protecting myself. I was trying to save a life. Literally, I thought, he's going to kill him. He's going to die. I can't just let him kill him. So I warned him, and he wouldn't listen to the warning. So I took him out. Because I was such a formidable guy, several people tried to get me to fight Nikki. They told me Nicky was going to meet me after school and he was going to fight me. I said, I don't want to fight Nicky. They wanted to see a fight. So Nicky and I met after school because I didn't want to be a coward, which was stupid. I should have just gone and taken the bus. But Nicky and I met after school, and I looked at Nicky, and Nicky looked at me, and I said, Nicky, I don't want to fight you. And he said, I don't want to fight you either. And I said, well, then let them fight each other. Let's don't fight. And he was like, right. So we shook hands and walked off, and that was that. Let me tell you, people will try and set you up and get you to fight somebody else because they want to see the spectacle. And it isn't always a physical fight. Sometimes it's a verbal fight. People are just trying to get people pitted against you. Did you know what he said about you? Did you know what she said about you? And they just try and get people irritated at each other. Don't be a party to that. That's stupid. Just don't get into that. Okay? And then there was one more opportunity. I'll tell you about it just because it's still one of my happy memories. There was a boy who was picking on another boy. And it just really galled me to see somebody beating up somebody else. And so I told him to stop, and he wouldn't. So this was in seventh grade. I walked over there, stepped on the toe of his shoe, and hit him. And it's, you know, if you're off balance and you can't move your foot, you tend to go down. And I walked off, and he never bullied that boy again. Say, so, Pastor Wood, you're saying it's okay, like, if we become like the Weirs Valley Ranch police, you know, the student police, can we be like the student police? And we'll go around, if we see somebody who's mistreating somebody else, we'll step in there and punch them? No. Because you're not going to the zoo I went to. You're in a place where there is lots of adult supervision, and all you've got to do if there's a problem is say to an adult, excuse me, but I think so-and-so is really being unkind to so-and-so. Would you please deal with that? Okay? And if somebody's being mean to you, you don't have to fight back. All you've got to do is say to one of the adults, excuse me, but so-and-so did thus and such, and that really hurt my feelings. And if you think you're going to use something that I said this morning as an excuse to get away with doing something violent here, guess what? It won't work. Is that clear? I hope it's clear, but I also hope that you know that God is our defender. Years ago, there was a very dangerous encounter between the government of the United States and the government of the Soviet Union, now Russia. Missiles had been placed in Cuba, very close to the coast of Florida. And we saw in the news that those missiles had the capacity of reaching Charlotte, North Carolina, where my family was living at the time. And that if the missiles were launched, we would only have a matter of minutes before they reached us, according to the experts. I said to my dad, what would we do? And he said, well, I expect we'd gather together and give each other hugs and have a word of prayer and wait to go to heaven. And I said, but shouldn't we do something? And he said, if you're not ready to die, you need to get ready. Because it's not just missiles that can take us out. And if you're not ready to die, you need to get ready. So let me ask you this morning. Are you ready to die? Are you ready to suffer? Because if you think that life is not going to have suffering and death, you're innocent, if not ignorant. The fact of the matter is, bad things happen. Car accidents, cancer, lightning, all kinds of stuff. And you and I need to be ready. And if we are ready, we don't have to be afraid. and I want you to be able to live without fear. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for these precious young people. Some of them have been through violence. Some of them have witnessed violence. But you have seen it all, and you care for them. I thank you that your word takes away our fear when we believe it and makes it so that we can courageously face the evils in this life. Even having the courage to turn the other cheek and not retaliate when people do us wrong. I pray that you would deliver us from evil and that you would help us to have wisdom to do what you would have us do, whether it is being well equipped and well prepared to defend others or whether it is simply being prepared to turn the other cheek. Thank you for the blessing of living in a country where we have such freedom, where we have self-governance. Help us to be faithful to the responsibilities that come from living in such a land. And grant that we would be prepared, as our Bill of Rights says. And we'll give you the praise in Jesus' name. Amen.